Episode 796, My Strength is My Story with Joan Turley, Sacred Work in Secular Places.
Moms, needing a little inspiration and a ray of hope? You've come to the right place. This is the show that you can turn to for just the pick-me-up you need. This is Create Your Now, Your Best Selfie. Here's your host, certified life coach, personal trainer, and nutritionist, Christiane Wargo.
Staring at a stop sign, watching people drive.
Happy, happy day. Today is My Strength is My Story series. And oh my goodness, you are going to absolutely love Joan. She is amazing. And we're going to take it to a different level today. We're talking about the workplace, sacred work in secular places. Have you ever wondered why you're stuck in your job? Well, maybe God has other plans for you that you did not realize. She is going to put a twist on it that is unbelievable, and you're going to love it. So stay tuned. For those of you who are brand new to the family, welcome. I'm so delighted of your presence. If you already haven't had the opportunity, you'll want to head on over to createyournow.com where you can learn more and sign up for the Kisses newsletter, the Keep It Simple Strategy Everyday Solutions to Live, Love, and Impact. Now, I got to tell you, Joan is a spitfire. I love her to death. She is an incredible woman. She has a heart of gold and, more importantly, a heart of Christ. Today, I know you'll be blessed. God has something special in store for you. So I want you to open up your heart and open up your mind. Tune in and listen to what Joan Turley has to say, Sacred Work in Secular Places. Welcome to Create Your Now. I am so excited to have this extraordinary, delightful guest with us today, Mrs. Joan Turley. She is an incredible woman. I'm telling you, the new book that she just wrote and authored, Sacred Work in Secular Places, you are going to want to get a copy of it. This woman, she is a wife, a mother of two children, and has an adorable, precious grandchild. And she is just full of gems. And I promise you that you will be blessed today. I am proud to call her friend, but more importantly, a sister in Christ. Joan, welcome. Come on in.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, well, you're so welcome. And I got to throw in there, too. You know, Joan is a woman who is truly on point. She's had the opportunity to work in the corporate world, and now she also owns her own business. She's led hundreds of employees underneath her. She's also a certified John Maxwell coach. She's obviously an author. We've already said that. She's a trainer and speaker, and she focuses on leadership and relationships. Now, I hope, Joan, I covered most of that.
You got it.
Woo! Well, I am so excited that you're here. I mean, you've been married for 38 years, so I'm not sure. Maybe we should have your hubby on and ask how he's handling it all.
He's my biggest cheerleader. Aww. He is my biggest cheerleader. He knew I was going to be doing this today, and it was so sweet. My son said, "Dad was in a really good mood today." And I said, "That's because he knows something good is happening for me." And that just, he's been it, my biggest cheerleader.
Oh, what a blessing. You don't hear a lot of those happy stories. I know your life and marriage isn't necessarily perfect, but it's nice to hear that you do have that support.
Yeah. The book, I dedicated it to him because I don't think it would have come about had he not been the one to keep saying, write, publish, you were meant to share this. So he pushed me more than I pushed myself.
Wow. Well, I am glad that you said yes to coming on with us today here at Create Your Now and that you're enjoying this coffee chat. I know that we truly, as the listeners, are going to be blessed with your gems of joy and especially of love. So take us back a little bit. Tell us where kind of your life began, not necessarily childhood, but, you know, kind of where some changes were beginning to happen in your life.
Well, where the changes happened was I thought as a young girl that I would be in full-time ministry forever. Hmm. And when life took unexpected turns and that did not happen, I was devastated. I was miserable. I was disappointed. I felt like everybody else was getting to live the dreams that I had, but I was never going to get to live them. And so I never wanted to be a worker bee. The only thing I had ever wanted to be was a mom and raise kids for the glory of God and be on mission with God, not working dark 30 to dark 30, that, you know, from sun up to sundown. And one day I stumbled on a quote, I'll never forget it, by, It says, most men lead quiet lives of desperation, and they go to the grave with a song still in them, Thoreau. And I thought, oh, my God, that's me. Mm-hmm. And I went into the deepest depression because I realized I wasn't living the abundant life. Didn't feel like that to me. I was living with a song in my heart, but I was going to go to the grave because I wasn't getting to sing it. And I really went into deep depression. And that caused me to start digging because I knew that I was missing out. I wasn't enjoying life. I had wonderful kids and a wonderful husband, but I had just buried all these dreams. And so I started to dig and just thought, what's going on? You know, and what does God say about work? There has to be an answer because I don't think I'm ever going to do a job that I love. It's just miserable. And I started digging and I started researching. And the more I dug, I began to discover that God was the author of work. And he actually loved work. Yeah, I went all the way back to Genesis and I discovered, you know, hey, work happened before the curse, before the fall. You see God creating and loving work, and it's after everything he did. It's good. It's good. It's good.
Yeah.
Well, I couldn't say that. And so, but that was a clue that I was onto something, that there had to be a way out of this workplace depression. And so that's kind of where it started. Just started searching for answers that what's my why, what's my purpose now that it's changed and I'm not on the mission field. Where's my calling? You know, so it's kind of started there. I didn't get the answers right away and I didn't walk into joy right away. But what happened was God did set my feet on a path and I just couldn't see it. Mm. So I went through three really rough jobs, but each one of those were preparing me for that sweet spot, that eventual job that I would have never been ready for had I not gone to the three jobs prior, kind of like running a race. Mm-hmm. I didn't know I was going to run a marathon. And God was saying, yeah, you're going to run a marathon and you're going to win. But I got to get you ready because you can barely walk. So those three jobs that I would drive up to literally crying because I hated it, I didn't know he was training me everything. He wastes nothing. He wastes nothing. And so when I finally landed the job that I call my sweet spot, which is what the book came about, I could look back, and in that book, I thank all those people that were a part of God's plan that I just didn't know were a part of God's plan, that they were shaping and pulling out and made me ready for the job that I eventually landed that I loved with all my heart, walked into my sweet spot. So,
wow. All of us would love to walk into that sweet spot, but there's so many of us, Joan, that are just, I mean, we're literally living moment by moment. I mean, we're hanging by a thread and we hate our job. What do you say to those people?
Well, here's what I have discovered. They're not alone. The latest statistics tell us that 80% of the workforce hate their jobs. Job dissatisfaction is at an all-time high. One statistic says it's like 51% that are disengaged, the other 17 to 20% actively pursuing other work. No one really likes work right now. I would say the change starts individually. And so for me, during that search, I was fortunate enough to hear my pastor preach a sermon called More Than a Paycheck. And this is what he said. And he pulled several scriptures, but this is what he said. He said, does it seem right that Jesus would hang on a cross, that Paul would be crucified upside down, you know, that some would be beheaded, some would be sawn asunder, that all these people would go through this so that we could work and have nice leather interiors? He said, I would suggest to you that work was not just supposed to be about an income, but about an impact, that your place, this platform and work, he chooses it. And when we as believers get this, that he is sovereign and that he places us where he needs us, you were there for an impact and he did not make a mistake. And it was like, oh, you mean I can be a light for God's glory in the place that he chose for me, and it's okay if I'm not some famous Bible teacher. You know, I may not have my face on the cover of every book in Lifeway bookstore, but that's okay. God is saying, no, I created you and I made you and I crafted you, and I don't waste anything in your life, Joan. And what that is for this moment in time. And the place that you're at right now, that's your platform. For my glory, will you shine there? And suddenly, I got really okay with work. And then he began to teach me, I want you to see there is no dichotomy in my kingdom between sacred and secular. Mm-hmm. And he took me all the way back. I stumbled on this really great book called 20 Centuries of Callings, and it takes you through understanding the church from early church through the Reformation to where we are now, and how as Christians, God uses business. This is the definition, truly. Let me go back and say this. It is an invitation to partner with God in a beautiful, broken world. Mm-hmm. When we work as an invitation to partner with God in a beautiful, broken world, work is not work anymore. It becomes this joy. Because I would walk in going, okay, there's someone here today that, I'm not talking about beating them up with the Bible. There's someone here today that just needs to know they are loved. They are precious. That's why the workplace is miserable today. There's no one validating people. No one saying, you are amazing. And we're spending most of our hours at work, but not getting any validation. No one comes alongside. It is time for us as believers to see we've been placed there that we might come alongside and bring the best out in people. And that's what that sweet spot was. I walked into a place that I call my sweet spot in the book that was so opposite of who I am. Most of the people held different political views, different religious views, different worldviews, mm-hmm. And completely opposite of me. But it was the place that the Lord began to teach me that, listen to me, Joan, everyone is special to me. And because they're special to me, they ought to be special to you. Because they're created in my image. They may not know me, and I don't want you to focus on that. What I want you to focus on is they're my image bearer. And because of that, they're special. So just love them where they're at. And when that began to happen, taking the time to get to know people, finding out, all of a sudden I realized I could no longer judge them like I used to judge them. As I got to know their stories, their tears made me cry. Their joy made me happy. I didn't see them through the eyes of, you don't line up with me biblically. All of a sudden, I saw them through the eyes of God and their potential. And I was able to just say, I think you're just asking me to love them. And if I love them well, when your Holy Spirit begins to draw or convict, they are going to know who to run to. Not someone who beat them up with the Bible, but someone who genuinely loved them. Now they have questions, and they're going to know where to go. So that makes the job a whole lot more special.
Oh, indeed it does. And I'm telling you, sacred work in secular places, you're going to want to pick up a copy. We will definitely have the link in the show notes for you, and you'll be able to also reach out with Joan. You'll be able to find her at joanlturley.com, and of course that will be in the show notes too. I got to tell you, Joan, I read this book from front to back, and it is so hot off the press. We literally just have this kind of makeshift copy here right now as we're recording this, which I think is awesome because it is so real and raw. You mentioned a lot about the not enoughs, and with love, you know, especially as women, men do it too, but men are easy. They can brush things off. You know, they can fight with their friend, and then they figure out that nothing's really ever happened. But as women, oh, no, we hold on to it, and a comment can be said to us, and we just, like, make it much bigger, and we dwell upon it, and it gets even bigger, and in your book, you write about not enough, and you had a lot of not enoughs.
Yes. Yes, I did. to get to the sweet spot, I first had to deal with, I had lost legalism. I got involved in some legalistic teaching that really crushes your spirit because you lose sight of how much God really loves you. So I had lost sight of that. So now you take someone who's lost sight of how precious she is to God and how much he loves her, and you stick me in the secular world in a workplace that they don't really care about you. Now, I didn't have a college degree. So my first job was working in a school district, and I am surrounded with these academic giants, and I just began to believe lies. I'm not smart enough. And they let you know that too. Oh, you don't have a degree? You don't even need to be a part of this conversation. So it was like your words and your worth mattered very little because you weren't a part of the educated elite. So this, I started encountering these not enough. So that was the first not enough I had to defeat. And I had to realize, well, what happened was there was one counselor that took the time to get to know me, and she recognized I had spent 10 years in the mission field loving people. And so one day all the counselors were out of the building and a tragedy happened. A child lost both parents and in a tragic accident. And as that rippled through the school and it came to the lead counselor, she called and she said, you called the principal and said, you need to put Joan back in that counseling office. And I was like, wait, I don't have a degree. She said to that principal, she has spent years comforting people, the broken and the lost. Put her back there. And so with just like a blink of an eye, I was ushered to the back to comfort these kids. And it was like the Lord said, I don't care if you have a degree or not. I can use you because love trumps education. Love and serving, that's a serving heart, a loving heart says, you got a need, what can I do? And so begin to open doors. And then... One year I was at where I had switched schools, and then I was in a high school, and I had mentored a young girl for many, many years, so much so that when she came to be a senior and they did her special ed testing, she no longer qualifies for special ed. Just that love and that interaction of personal interaction and believing in someone. So they had me come and speak to the entire teaching staff on the value of mentoring. And I'm like, well, I'm just an uneducated fool, but let me talk to you about mentoring. You know, a heart to love, a heart to serve will trump everything. Mm-hmm. So that kind of defeated the not enough, because I began to see God is in the business of partnering with us right where we're at. He doesn't say, go get your degree and then I'll start using you. Amen. I mean, I love education. I'm just a few hours short of getting an associate degree. Both my kids have college degrees. I could be a professional student from now till Jesus comes. I love education. But he was saying to me, you don't have to wait. Start right now, and I will use you if you will partner with me. So that's how we dealt with the not enough education. And then there were two other not enoughs. The other one was not enough polish, mm-hmm. and then not enough leadership. And those were my three big giants. So the not enough polish, I ended up working for a dear friend who ran a fantastic marketing firm, but she had high-end clientele. I mean, the highest, most elite clientele in Houston. So she walked in her St. John suit. You know, I walked in my Walmart suit. You know, I mean, it's like, hello. And so I thought I had class. I thought I had style. But in her eyes, I had none of that. Everything about me screamed not enough polish. And so it was really an attack on my womanhood, because suddenly I questioned everything, because she would lovingly criticize the lipstick color I wore, to my hair color, to the jewelry that I wore. I didn't even want to go shopping anymore because I thought, I can't pick out anything right. And so for a long time, it made me really upset, and I would get mad. But one time we walked into this event, and one of her top clients, because she had told me prior to this event, Joan, you can only wear clear nail polish or the, like, cotton candy, OPI's cotton candy, light pale. Well, I thought, are you serious? And so then I I got this book called Dress for Success, and it actually said I could wear red nail polish. And so I walk into this event, and her top client has bright red nail polish on. I look over, and I'm thinking, her client's got red polish on. So I go to the store, and I buy the brightest red polish I could find, go in, bang my nails in front of her face, and said, I'm wearing Kathy Smith red. And she was like, what? I said, if Kathy can wear it, I can wear it. So I thought, I've got polish, finally. So really, in the end, what I really learned with working for the sweet woman was that only God looks at the heart. Man looks at the outside. And if you want to have that, it's like a first date. You got to be polished, or you might never get that second date. So instead of fighting the not enough polish, I just started to embrace it. I just soaked it up like a sponge. Okay, what am I supposed to wear today? Well, years later, when I walked into that sweet spot, it was in the wealthiest area of all of Houston, the old money, and I had polish because of her. And so it was like, get my pumps, get my pearls, get my understated black outfit. I fit right in. So that's how I attacked the not enough polish. Now, the not enough leadership just about sent me under, because I left there and ended up working for a nonprofit. Mm-hmm. And I know I did not appreciate what I had there, because this was a dynamic person to work for. But I didn't have all this corporate experience. I mean, and as the organization grew, it was a new organization, and as it grew and garnered great awards and accolades for the work it was doing, it was obvious that we were going to need more help. Mm-hmm. I volunteered there when I left the other job and ended up getting a job offer to be the director's, the president's assistant and director of community relations. But as the more and more people rolled in and they were highly educated, I was like a fish out of water. I was like, I don't fit here, because I didn't have what they had. I didn't know what measurables and deliverables were. I didn't know what all these things that corporate people knew. I just had a decade of ministry experience. I had 3 years of copywriting. That's what I had done at the other company. But I didn't have that. And so I remember one time one of the young girls said to me, who was rising in the ranks, and she is just brilliant, but she said, you don't really have leadership. And I was like, excuse me? I was on the mission field before you were born. I have put 2 kids through college. I've kept a husband going when he couldn't find work. I've got a mom with Alzheimer's, and I don't have leadership. Well, she didn't mean to offend me. That was not her intent, but I was drowning, and that was the nail in the coffin, and I just kind of shut down. But that sweet, sweet president could see that, and she knew that. I think we both knew it wasn't the right fit, and so she began to pray that God would open up the right place. Her prayer was, "Let me get her to a safe place," and that's how I ended up in the sweet spot. And so she really walked me into that sweet spot. And it was there that God began to say, yes, you do have leadership, but you lead people. I don't care about corporate strategies. That's not what I made you for. I made you to lead these right-brain creative artists who need to be loved, who need to know that they have not reached glass ceilings. I ended up coaching and leading stylists that made over 6 figures. I mean, these were not, these were the elite of the elite, and I had this privilege of leading them. I mean, I saw their paychecks. I was like, what? You can make that being a stylist? So I got to lead this amazing team of people, and I didn't start off as the leader. I just started off, they really had me working like conflict resolution. If employees had disputes, I kind of settled them. If customers had dissatisfaction, I handled it. I didn't start off to be the leader. And then 6 months into the job, the director quit. And the owner said, tag, you're it. And I said, oh, no, I can't do this. Mm. I said, I have never looked at a profit loss statement. I've never hired, never fired. I think you got the wrong person. I said, I can be an Aaron to Moses. I have never been a Moses, just an Aaron. I only hold up people's hands. She said, you're it. But those 6 months of that initial job there, I heard the Lord say, I just want you to love these people, Jen. Take the time to love them. I didn't know what he was saying and doing was, I want you to love them because I'm going to put their hearts in your hand. And so in loving them, when that happened, they were like, oh, yeah, we want her. That's who we want. She gets us, and she loves us. So I have to tell everybody, and I do, it's not that I had great, extraordinary abilities. It's that I was blessed with an incredible team who said, we're going to help you. And they taught me the industry from the ground up. And then God began to send in amazing reps for the lines that we carried. They could see that I was floundering. They taught me. They taught me how to understand my people's numbers. They taught me how to read profit and loss statements. They taught me how to help my people reach their full potential. It was just incredible. And so I go all the way back to the beginning. Was just, it all started with love. It all started with God saying, I just want you to love these people. Stop trying to fix them. I just want you to love them. And they really made me the leader that I became. So I have to, the book says in the beginning, it says, and to that beautiful team of people, you know who you are, you made this possible. And it's true. And years later, I still get messages on Facebook thanking me and saying we missed you and we didn't know what we had. Because most bosses are bosses. They're not leaders.
Yeah.
They don't take the time. They're so busy about meeting the profit, making a profit, that they have forgotten that people and purpose should come before profit. And I'm going to say that again. You should put your people and your purpose before the profit. You'll have profit if you put your people first. Mm-hmm. So, and that's what's missing. They're so busy trying to meet their profit that they've forgotten your best asset are your people. And if you don't see them and recognize them and understand they're flawed, they're not perfect, but they're here with a heart to serve and you can bring the best out in them, that's where I think companies are failing today. It's like leadership has just become this buzzword. We throw it around.
Yes.
People don't even know how to become a leader. And so when you begin to teach them, this is what leadership really looks like, that servant leadership model, this is what it looks like. It's not just, I'm not talking about mushy love. Real love is accountability.
Yeah.
But when you've loved those people, now you have the right to say, hey, we need to have a little come to Jesus meeting. Come on into my office. Come on into my office. We need to talk. You earn that right because you have loved them well.
Yes.
You know, so those were the lessons that I learned, and it quickly became this passion of mine to love people well enough that you can speak truth into their life and help them reach that potential.
Well, I think you've just erased all the not enoughs. I'm just saying. You know, you'll have to have a second book to, you know, describe on how you went through erasing all the not enoughs, because I'm telling you, you're definitely going to want to pick up a copy of Sacred Work and Secular Places, Finding Joy in the Workplace. Joan does an extremely superb job. I have read it from front to back. I am not one that reads absolutely every single word of every book that I put in my hand, but this one I did, and it was one I could not put down. And in fact, it really brought me in, Joan, as I was reading some of the stories and hearing your stories, as I read yours, I would hear my own in my head. And then also it popped up in my head, because being a mom of five, it can get kind of a little bit strenuous, like a workforce. I mean, I'm the CEO of my family. Yes, I am also the CEO of my business, but I'm primarily the CEO of my family. That is a gift that God has given me, and his expectations are probably even higher than mine as a perfectionist. What would you tell women, and even our dads out there, Being a CEO of a family in leadership and love, how can you combine those two together?
Okay. So I'm going to take you back to when I first started at the Sweet Spot, overwhelmed like you are being the CEO of your family with your five kids, your business. So this was a moment I was walking down the sidewalk with a tiredness that no amount of caffeine could have fixed. I mean, I had a mother with Alzheimer's. I was teaching a Sunday school class. I was in college, and now I was in a new job and wanting to do it really, really well. I am at type A. I do have a 4.0 on my college right now. You know, it's like, I will graduate summa cum laude, you know? So I remember, though, I just stopped and at the sidewalk. It was early, early in the morning before I walked in, and I just kind of breathed in deeply and caught my breath. I thought, I am so tired. I don't know, God, how to keep everybody happy, how to learn this job, how to take care of my mom. I was just a meltdown. And it's one thing to hear an adage that we've heard all of our life. It's another thing when the light bulb finally comes on and we know how to walk it out. And I felt like in that moment, God just said to me, one day at a time. And I kind of turned my head and I thought, did you say one day at a time? He said, you might not have tomorrow, Joan. It's not promised. I could call you home tonight. I could call you home tomorrow. In fact, people are going to get in their cars today, and some of them will never make it home. Mm-hmm. So what is really important is today. When you walk through those doors, I want you to forget about tomorrow, and I want you to just do what you can do today. I want you to love well, laugh well, forgive often. And so it was like I would walk in that door, and I'd go, okay, I might not be here tomorrow. So if all I really have is today, what is it that I need to do today? What could I do today that if he calls me home, it's all good? It's all good. You know, we hear One Day at a Time, Sweet Jesus. There's a song about that called One Day at a Time, Sweet Jesus, you know. But I had never lived it until that moment. And so suddenly I wasn't worried about the test that was next week or a mom who needed to get to the doctor's office or this or that. It was like, all I've got is today. So I would say to anyone, even though we say it over and over, until you start living that. So in other words, when you wake up in the morning, we could easily be stressed with everything. I am a solopreneur too. I was working the other night till 9:30. My son said, why are you working so late? Well, I said, it's just me. So I could easily be overwhelmed. I have to remind myself, I just got today. He doesn't expect me to live what's in the future. He just expects me to live today. And with that knowledge, you do love more deeply. You do forgive more quickly. You don't hold on to grudges. It's easier to go, in the scheme of eternity, how important is this really? You know, what is the bigger battle? So that focus of one day at a time got me through the most overwhelming days in that moment of trying to become something I had never been before. Never been a boss, you know, never done any of this. I think people in their mind, because I'm going to tell you it, in their heyday, this was a $12 million company. And I'm looking at her going, you picked me to lead this company? Someone who's never done anything like this? It's just really miraculous that I got picked, you know? What a privilege, you know?
You made it through.
And I made it through, and it is the sweetest, and I used to tell my team that. I'd say, one day, there's going to come a day when I'm not here in this place, and you will be the sweetest working memories I have ever had. And that is true. I still cry for that team. They hold this special place in my heart that no one else will ever hold, because the joy of leading them, of working with them, of getting to know what made them tick, and making them feel like you are precious. You know, no one was speaking that to them. And to me, I can hardly say this without crying. To me, that is the greatest privilege of being a leader, is you get to come alongside and whisper into their ears the things that God would want to whisper to them. That they're precious in his sight. They have great potential. They have everything within them to succeed. When you get to do that, there's nothing greater. And that is what makes the workplace for me this joy. You know, I did share one story where at one time I had a new boss in that same company, and not my religion, you know, and in fact, you know, completely opposite. But she had a sister who was going through a divorce and was hurting. It was something that just you just don't do in that culture. And so the sister was going to be moving back. And I remember I looked at her and I said, you know, I think we should give your sister a housewarming. And she said, well, what's a housewarming? Because they don't do that in that culture. I said, it's where a bunch of women are going to come together. And we're going to bring little mementos to place in her home that when she looks around, she's going to know she's supported and she's loved. I said, does that sound like something that might really be something, a blessing for your sister? She said, that's incredible. I said, okay, well, let's do it. So we did this housewarming. And as I looked around the room, there were Christian women, there were Jewish women, there were Muslim women. And I'm like, three unique cultures in one room, they're gathered to bless one hurting woman. I'm telling you, it was a profound moment. And so I looked at those women at the end. And I said, okay, I know that we're from different places in the world. Some of you are Muslim. Some of you are Christian. And we even have our little token Jew here. And I said, you know, I said, would you mind if we just said a prayer for our sweet sister, that she would know how loved she is? And as all those women bowed their heads, I thought, this is just incredible. This is only God can do this. That is what work is about. It is about just naturally walking in the love of God into other people's lives. And so that's kind of where the joy that I see is ours to possess if we understand that's not just about an income. It's about an impact.
Yes. And it's beautifully said, powerful words beyond wisdom, Joan. You got me even tearing up. And I did. You know, this book, Sacred Work in Secular Places, when you pick up your copy, you're going to want to have tissue next to you because you're going to be crying. And then you're going to be crying tears of joy and laughter, too, because some of them you're just like, really? I didn't see that one coming. And that's what I love about it. But I also love that, you know, being from the background, my father was a minister. He has since passed away. And so I'm a preacher's kid, along with an Army brat, Navy brat, all wrapped into one. Well, with that being said, you know what it's like to go to church on Sundays, and we don't do anything else for the rest of the week. It's like we forget it, and we leave it at the church. And then, oh, we come back on Sundays, and we have to be this perfect, proper family. And we come in, and we look like everything's nice and normal and neat and put together. And when actually, if you were to look at the other 6 days, we're falling apart. We're in overwhelm. We're frustrated. We're acting out in fear. We're yelling and screaming at each other. There's a total loss of God, whether we are in the home, whether we're in the workplace, or whether we're in public just going shopping for our groceries. And now with social media, everything is blasted everywhere. Mm-hmm. In reading your book, it really brought to light that you don't just have to be a Christian on Sundays.
Oh, yeah.
Speak to that just a little bit as to how, because I do believe that's where we fall short a lot of times. We think we're doing what we're supposed to do, what God expects us to do, our interpretation of his laws or how he is telling us to live out our dreams or even reality, wherever we are in that walk in our journey. Speak a little bit to that.
Okay, so when I first connected the dots that work is this platform for his glory. Mm-hmm. And then I felt like I had literally walked into what I called my Babylon, because it was really different. And I didn't know how this was going to work out. But I stumbled onto this quote by Billy Graham. And it said, it is God's job to judge. It is the Holy Spirit's job to convict. It is my job to love. And I felt like the Holy Spirit said, you know, you need to take a back step. You're not me. You don't have to fix anybody. What you have to do is love these people. So it's easier said than done. And I'm going to talk about one story that's in the book called Oh Snap, We Hired Judas. Okay, so this beautiful person came to interview with us and had an impeccable resume. In fact, so much so that we should have had a red flag when we saw that this person was only applying for a entry level. It didn't match what was on the resume. But we were desperate to fill this chair because we had a stylist depart. And when a stylist departs, that means revenue goes. So we hired this person. Well, it didn't take long before we realized, oh my gosh, what happened to the person that we interviewed? This is like not the same person. This person was hell-bent on making everybody's life miserable, thought this person knew everything, couldn't take correction, really was in over their heads. Instead of saying, could you help me, they started pointing fingers at everything that everybody else was doing. Mm-hmm. Well, as God would have it, I happened to be taking a counseling class that semester. And I walked in, I had it up to here because it was obvious he was whispering in the ownership's ears everything negative about me. And I was like, this is Judas. And he wants to crucify me, and I am not Christ, and I do not want to get on the cross. And so they were having this session at the class that night and about how we're supposed to love people. And I finally just raised my hands and I said, look, professor looked at me, what's up? I said, and it was a substitute teacher that night. Oh. I said, okay, I know this is a Christian class. I know this is a Christian school, but I have hired Judas and I am madder than a wet hen. And I mean, I just had a meltdown. I said, I don't like this person. If I'm honest, I hate this person. This person wants to crucify me. I said, I can't stand this person. And I can't stand the way it's making me feel because I know I should love this person. But I don't. I just was miserable. I think the class was like, oh, my word. I mean, I just kind of let loose. That professor walked to the board, and he looked at me, and he said, I think I can help you, Joan. And he drew on the board a large capital A, and then he drew a large capital B. And he looked at me, and he said, I'm going to ask you a question, Joan. Who can you build? I said, well, I can only build people who are teachable, other Christians or people who are teachable. Ding, 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 you get the gold star. He goes, that's right. You can only build people who want to be built. And he said, do you believe that God is sovereign? Yes, sir, I believe he's sovereign. And he goes, well, then if he's sovereign, everyone who comes into your life, he comes into your life because he is sovereignly placed in there, and it's either going to be for A or for B. Well, I took the bait. And I'm like, okay. So what is A? And he goes, ambassador of love. And when he said that, he looked at me and he said, actually, Joan, you should be weeping for this person. Because if this person were to die, more than likely they're not going to heaven. That should drive you to your knees. He said, stop trying to fix this person. So people come into your life, they're either going to be an A or a B. It completely changed my entire leadership style. I started assessing people. Okay, is this an A or is this a B? If it's a B, I'm going to spend my energy building them. Mm-hmm. And if it's an A, I'm going to spend my love just loving them. Because they can't be built. They're too broken. And normally they will only be in your life for a season. He didn't send them there to be built. He sent them there because they needed love. When I got that, I knew immediately I needed to ask for forgiveness. So the next day, this person walks in past my door, desk, and I looked up at him. I said, could you come here just for a minute? Kind of patted my desk. I had him sit next to the chair. I said, I need to ask you something. He kind of looked at me. I said, I need to ask your forgiveness. I think their heart just fell. It was like, what? I said, I have not taken the time to validate you. I've not taken the time to listen to you. And I'm really, really sorry. I want you to know that whenever you need to talk, you just come on by my desk. I'm going to stop what I'm doing, and I'm going to give you the time of day that you deserve. About 2 weeks later, I had the most beautiful bouquet of flowers on my desk. And then eventually that person moved on. But they moved on with me having a clean conscience because I got it. Yeah. So that's what I say. When we get busy and we don't understand what's happening and we're overwhelmed, stop and ponder what's really going on here. You know, even with your own kids, that sometimes they might be in a mode where they're just not ready to be built.
Right.
You need to take a step back and go, I think what they're needing right now is just a little love. And what I found even in my coaching practice, that sometimes people are at a place where they're not really ready to hear yet. But if I spend a season sharing a cup of coffee, getting to know them, just loving them, I can have seen people move from A to B, where now they're ready to be built. So I don't know if that totally answers your question, but in those moments, because we will be squeezed and there will be pressure that comes on us, we need to step back and say, what is happening with this person that's grit in my life? That's like that, I call them my sandpaper friends. Something's happening. What does he say? Am I supposed to build or am I supposed to love? That has completely set me free. I don't even worry. Like, if I know I'm supposed to have a meeting with someone, like when I was working, and it's like, you better get their numbers up. It's like, it's not on me. I think I need to spend time because they can't hear. You know, they just need to be loved. So it took that pressure off of, I don't have to get them there, because eventually they're going to be moving on anyway. This is why they're here. And then some of them we did see cross over to where they were ready to be built. And that has really helped me. It's been a lifelong lesson for me.
Oh, very well said. And yes, you did answer my question, by the way. And I think a lot of us need to take that to heart, honestly. Are you at the A part or the B part with the people that you're interacting with? Because I do think, especially as women, men not so much, because men are just like, you know, they're just like, come on, guys, let's go out and hang out. We're good with this. But for women, we're the nurturers. That's something that is embedded within us. It's in our DNA. That's how God created us. And by being nurturers, we want to try to fix everybody. We want to try to show them the next step. What can we do? How can we take you by the hand? And sometimes we just need to truly take them by the hand and love on them.
Yeah. Because we can't fix them.
Yeah.
And there will be people that God's going to say, I've given you the expertise and you can help them. But then there are others that he just says, can you just walk with them? Just walk with them. Mm-hmm. Take them for coffee. Because at some point, years down the line, they will remember that person that loved them in their brokenness, even when they couldn't be fixed. Because I believe we serve a God who keeps reaching out to people, wants to heal. And it might not be at that moment, but years down the line, when he's dealing and they're ready, they're going to remember that person she loved me even when I was not very nice. You know, she still loved me. Those are the things that I have found in work that are so necessary. You know, God has used some great men in my life. I've had great men leaders in my life. I've had great women leaders in my life. But I rejoice in being a woman. You know, that I think there's each one has a special role to play in people's lives. But to be a woman in leadership and to be a godly woman in leadership, it has been a great privilege. You know, we talked about children and, you know, God has used my own children to teach me how to be a better leader because, you know, there's this little thing called write-ups in work. And I had never done a write-up. It's like, what? You've got to write? I'd never been written up. I didn't even know they existed. It's like, you got to write people up? It's really hard, adult to adult, to write up another adult.
Yes.
It's like, this is just awkward, you know? And so, but I remember I had a young guy that had to be written up. And as he walked into my office, I heard the Lord say, look in his eyes. And when I looked in his eyes, it was like he said, I need you to remember something, Joan. That person is someone's child. That person is someone's mate. They are special to someone. And I'm going to ask you something, Joan. If that were your son sitting there in his boss's office getting called in on the red carpet, what would you want for him? And I thought, I would want that person to see what I see, to see that he's got great potential. Yeah, he might have blown it here, but it's not worth throwing him out. He needs somebody come alongside and say, I'm going to walk with you. I'm going to develop you. So it completely changed the way we did write-ups in the company. It became right. We didn't do a write-up unless you had a restoration plan. Mm-hmm. So if one of my leaders came to me and said, I'm writing so-and-so up, I would look and it was like, well, where's your restoration plan? You don't get to write someone up unless you can restore them. And that goes all the way back to when I was 18 years old in East Texas, a summer night, sitting there with a great leader. And he said to me, he said, "I want to tell you something, Joan." He said, "This is what I believe about rebuke. You should never rebuke someone unless in the same breath you can restore them." Mm-hmm. If you can't restore them, you should not be doing the rebuking. And so we just, it was like the Lord said, that was for this. And this is why I've allowed you to walk in this moment, because this is not healthy in most workplaces. People who get put into leadership places, often the power goes to their head. And it is it's not really a position. He has given us a purpose. So we're a leader for a purpose, not for a position. And so in that purpose, he began to teach me, this is what needs to be modeled. This is why people are hurting. They've not been dealt with in a manner that is worthy of an image bearer. So I want you to speak and to begin to teach your leaders. They cannot do a write-up unless they do a restoration. And now people aren't afraid of correction. You see, The word says that rebuke is the way of life, not death. He wants us to embrace correction. But most of the time, we're scared to death to be corrected. So we need to model in the workplace and teach our people correction's a good thing. It's not a negative thing. And we're going to show you and restore you. So those are the major lessons that I was learning.
Beautiful lessons, I must say. And I have to throw a teaser in, though, because we're not going to give all the details out in the book, because you're going to want to pick a copy up of your own Sacred Work in Secular Places. Again, we will have the link in the show notes and how you can get in contact with Joan if you wanted to come and speak, or maybe you want to dive a little bit deeper with her and into some coaching. She would love to chat with you on that. But one thing I want to tease about is that when you finally hit your sweet spot, as you say, you had this chair that you put next to your desk. And I found it very profound when you were writing in there of how this chair stood out. And I believe no matter where the listeners are in their walk right now, in their journey, that they can learn from each story, especially when you talk about your chair. So I'm not going to say anything more about that, because they got to pick up a copy of the book, because that's the only way they're going to find out what that chair is all about. But I don't know about you, Joan. I am feeling tremendous amount of love from you. Your heart shines full of joy and gentleness and tenderness, and then it's full of grace. And, you know, if each person who is hearing your voice right now, and as they continue to listen and maybe even come back and replay this for encouragement, even when they're in a state of turmoil, challenges in their life, that they will remember that the first and most important thing is to love yourself, so then you can go forth and love your neighbor, as you have so said here in your book, that we need to bring the love to the workforce. And it's not that mushy, cushy love like you're smooching on somebody, because I think sometimes that's where our mind goes. That's what, you know, the media wants us, the TV, the Netflix, the Hulu, whatever you're watching your shows on. They want us to think of this as more a sexual calling when we hear the word love. Right. And God did not intentionally give us that love first. That's the secondary. There's the first part of the love.
The original, if we go back to the original Greek, and you probably know this and you're bringing up, agape, which really means choosing for one's highest good. Mm-hmm. And so you may have people that just rub you the wrong way, that just get on your last nerve. We all have them. But you can always choose for their highest good. That form of love is a choice where we say, these people have been entrusted to my care, so I have a responsibility, and I can choose for their highest good. It doesn't mean they're going to be my best friend. It doesn't mean that I'm going to feel butterflies when I think about them, but I can choose for their highest good, because for whatever reason, God has put them in my life for this season, and I want to have represented that well. I've often found, though, too, when I do get in that place where I don't love myself, or I'm having those moments that I'm down on myself, typically it means it's because my eyes have been too much on myself. And if I will turn the to know, okay, somebody's got it worse than me. And there always is someone who has it worse than you. And so I started to look, well, who right now is in that desperate place that could just use a cup of coffee? The minute we begin to pour out, joy begins to come into us.
Yes.
It's when we're not pouring out. It's like God pours into us, but it was never supposed to just stay in us. It is to be poured out. Mm-hmm. And when we don't pour it out, that is typically when we get into our little pity party. Woe is me. Yeah. And we start comparing ourselves with others. I mean, one of my favorite scriptures, comparing themselves among themselves, they became unwise. It is a trap, this comparison thing. And as women, I struggle with it all the time because I will go into a room and I'll look at the beautiful people and I'm going, okay, that's the beautiful people. I'm short. I'm a little chunky. I'm getting older. They got no wrinkles. I got a few wrinkles. We do this and it's terrible. When he's saying, I love you just the way you are. And so take your eyes off yourself because you're not going to be happy and start pouring out. And joy comes. I mean, I don't care how tired I am. I one time I had a girl call me. I'd gone in on a Saturday. I didn't usually work on Saturdays and was doing some work. And I was going to try to make it home. And the phone rang at 4:00. And Miss Joan, I need to talk to you. I was like, I just want to go home. But I said, honey, what time do you get off? And she said, I don't get off till 6:00, but I need to talk to you. I said, okay, darling, I'll meet you at Starbucks. So I called my husband and I said, I really need to spend some time with this girl. And is that okay? I know it's later than what we said. He said, sure, it's fine. Can I tell you, it was the most life-changing moment for her and for me. We sat in that Starbucks for 2 hours. We both left not tired, completely energized, because that's what happens when we care about one another.
Amen.
I got more joy from that than any 2-hour shopping trip would have given me. You know, it's like pouring life into one another and seeing hope grow in their eyes and that weight come off their shoulders. There's not another feeling like that in the world. That's what we were created to do, is to come alongside. And that's a privilege. So, that's when you'll start finding joy. That is when the depression begins to leave at work. As long as we just keep it about, I got to get up and go to work and do this, and we don't put our eyes on people in the workplace and see that they've been placed there by the hand of God, and he has uniquely made us for whatever it is that's happening in their life. When we start to move in that, you will start to move in what work was really supposed to be about. Income, yes. God wants us to have nice things. I believe that. But the greater thing, the eternal thing, is the impact. To know that one day we will stand in glory and we will see all these people that he allowed us to meet and to love on as his representative. So there's just nothing greater. And the greatest freeing moment was recognizing they didn't even have to be a Christian. That they are in his image. And if all you can do is love them because they cannot hear yet. Because, see, you cannot answer questions that people aren't asking.
Right.
So just to love. They'll remember that. They'll remember that. That is why I said it's finding joy in the workplace. You know, sacred work in secular places, there's no dichotomy. And when we find that joy, it's not a ball and chain. It was a ball and chain for years for me, and I was miserable. But once I discovered God loved work, I'm made in his image, I'm his child. If he loves work, I can love it too. Everything changed.
That's right. And you were released of that ball and chain.
Yes. Amen.
Yes, yes. Well, here at Create You Now, we say live, love, and impact. And Joan, you are truly doing that. And your smile, your joy in your heart, your just jubilance even for Christ and what he blesses each of us with just shines through. You're truly beyond a diamond in the rough.
Thank you so much. It's just been a joy to share a little bit of this story.
Oh, well, I got to ask you before we go, there's going to be people who want to know how to get in touch with you, where to find you. Where do they find you?
JoanLTurley.com. and Joan at JoanLTurley.com.
Okay. And we will definitely have both of those in the show notes. So if you're like, I'm driving and Christine, I can't write it down, you're covered. Just look in the show notes. It'll be there. I promise you. And of course, you're going to want to pick up a copy, Sacred Work in Secular Places. It is a must read, in my opinion. It's a great read. And we will have that link also in the show notes. But Joan, before we let you go, a couple things. Number one, share with us either a favorite Bible verse or quote. You've given us a couple, but what's another one?
Well, my favorite life scripture is Psalms 107, verse 20. It says, He sent His word and He healed them. That was in that broken place before I got to that sweet spot of just realizing that the world can give you coping techniques, but that word of God is still powerful today. And when we take the time to get in it, whatever's messed up inside of us, He will heal. He sent His word and He healed them. So all of this goes back to just years and years ago of thinking that those not enoughs were reigning supreme in my life and that my life would never amount to a hill of beans. And Him saying, if you'll just show up and meet with me in the morning, I'm going to change some things in your life. That was in 1999. And 6 months later, I was in a new job. And the next three jobs were all direct reports to presidents of companies, even though I did not have a college degree. I credit that to being obedient to getting up and meeting with Him. And Him just saying, what do you dream about, Joan? Because I'm fixing to bless it. So that's what I say.
Beautiful, full of love, full of joy. One last question, Joan, before we end our coffee chat today. But before I even get to the question, I got to just tell you, I want to invite you back. I know you've got more brewing in your little stew. And so I want to give you an open invitation to come back and chat with us another time.
Anytime. Anytime.
Fabulous. Well, on your question going out, it's one thing with My Strength is My Story here in this series. What has your story gifted you?
What has my story gifted me?
Yes.
I think this is what my story has gifted me, because I was thinking about this the other day. If I could say to anyone, I would say, own your gifts, first of all. See, I knew from little bitty that I loved to communicate. I wanted to teach. I wanted to speak. I wanted to write. But I was taught, we weren't supposed to be proud. We needed to be humble. So for fear that God forbid that someone would say to me, oh, she's arrogant or she's proud, mm-hmm. I would not step out into the limelight because I did not want to be accused of the reason she likes speaking is she just likes center stage. Well, no, the reason I like speaking is because that's the gift He has given me. It's not my gift. It's His gift in me. And so to recognize that whatever your gift is, it is His gift in you, and He wants you to shine in it. And it wasn't until my pastor said one Sunday, he said, the very first time I took to the stage, I knew that was my sweet spot. And I was like, Pastor Gray can say, it's okay to get it in the spotlight. And it was like he said, I was made for this. And when he said that, it was like I was released to acknowledge these are things that God has gifted me for. Not for me, not for my glory, but that He would use that love that He had given me. So whatever your love is, if it's you love administrative stuff, you've got some things that make you tick. And whatever that is, no, don't stand in the shadows. See, I hid in the shadows and wept because I really wanted to speak encouragement. I am a Barnabas by nature, son of encouragement, daughter of encouragement. That's what makes me happy. But I didn't use that gift because I didn't want somebody to think I was proud. I didn't want somebody to say I was arrogant. So I just stood back. I would tell people, know your gift, own it, God delights in it. Step onto your platform for His glory and just shine in the gifts that He has given you. And don't let anybody take that away from you.
That is a beautiful way to end our conversation, Miss Joan. Thank you so much for your time, for your energy, and more importantly, I love you, girl. You are just such a sweetheart. I cannot wait because we've never met in person. So one of these days, I know our paths will cross in person, yes, and we'll have to go to a real coffee chat together.
That's great.
Cheers. Thank you so much.
Okay. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Love. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Feeling inspired, ready to train for life, and love your journey? Visit createyournow.com for more incredible resources to help you along the way. We'll see you next time on Create Your Now, Your Best Selfie. And remember, always be sure you consult your physician before beginning any health and fitness plan.